Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies.
You're going to talk about wrestling, that's redneck talk.
And guess what, Fatso? I'm the world champion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. This is in our rotation of classic pro wrestling shows. We've rotated back around to the History of Pro Wrestling at Madison Square Garden series, where we're covering the entire history of pro wrestling at arguably the most famous arena in the entire world, New York's Madison Square Garden. We started all the way back in the 1800s at Gilmore's Garden. We've progressed forward. We're up to 1913 now. If you would like to listen to the entire series in chronological order, if you'll go to whenitwascool.com, and I've set this up where it's easy for you to find. If you'll go to the podcast, genre-specific podcast, I've started kind of grouping shows that are the same together up there. So if you go to the genre-specific podcast, you'll see the Madison Square Garden series there. And we are using for reference the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone at whenitwascool.com. And also our primary source for this information is Wrestling in the Garden, Volume 1, 1875 through 1939. This is one of Scott Teal's books. And we're going to pick up now in 1913. When last we left Madison Square Garden, we had been talking about the first Italian superstar there, and there would be more in the coming years. We talked about Giovanni Rashvish and the success he had there. Perhaps a name you've not heard much about. It's a name I really hadn't heard that much about before. Apparently, now there's a lot of research being done into Rashvish's wrestling career, but he's one of those names that's kind of slipped through the cracks of history, and we're glad to shine a spotlight back on him. But as we go now forward into 1913, we're going to get to some familiar names you may have heard of, that would have really a connection up to today's wrestling world. And I always like to find these links. And so you think about, there are several wrestlers today who were trained by Harley Race. In fact, Trevor Murdoch, who was recently the current incarnation of the NWA's World Heavyweight Champion, he was trained by Harley Race there in Missouri. Well, Harley Race, who trained him? Well, it was different people, but as a kid, as a child, believe it or not, he worked on a farm for two well-known wrestlers, the Zbyszko brothers, Stanislius and Vladek Zbyszko. Yes, even all the way back there. And so we're going to be talking about those brothers now. We've mentioned them priorly, and we're going to really get kind of into the Zbyszko era right now. You may have heard of the Zbyszko brothers, very famous wrestlers, the both of them. And let's look at their time at Madison Square Garden. May the 19th, 1913, the attendance, 2,500 people at Madison Square Garden. We have Stanislius Zbyszko beat Raymond Sejour. So sounds like we have another Frenchman there, or French Canadian possibly. I don't know that much about Raymond Sejour. The other Zbyszko brother also wrestles. Vladek Zbyszko beats George Sandel. Two falls to none. The first fall was less than 3 minutes. The second one was just over 11 minutes, so a pretty short match. And then another name that's you may have heard mentioned historically, George Lurich. He defeated Paul Sampson in two straight falls. I want to go, before we go to our next newspaper article, let's go ahead and get another show that was held a week later, May 28th, 1913. George Lurich defeats Stanislius Zbyszko in 16 minutes, 21 seconds after Zbyszko is unable to continue. His brother, Vladek, defeated Paul Sampson in 34 minutes. And then George Bothner, another well-known name in wrestling history, went to a draw with Luigi Bull Montana. 15 minutes. So let's talk about the what the New York Times, I believe, had to say about this couple of shows. This is actually this is from, I guess, the Associated Press, from the Scranton Republican, from Scranton, Pennsylvania. Zbyszko collapses in bout with Lurich. New York City. Stanislav Zbyszko, the Polish wrestler, collapsed from weakness in his bout with George Lurich of Russia after 16 minutes and 21 seconds of wrestling at Madison Square Garden tonight. The Polish wrestler entered the ring with his head swathed in bandages as a result of an injury received in his match with Constance Le Morin in Montreal last Saturday night. Yep, doing the old injury angles there, right? After a minute's wrestling, the bandages came off, showing a wound over the left temple. Zbyszko remained on the defensive throughout until his collapse. The referee, Charlie White, refused to let the men continue. After several minutes' rest, Zbyszko was able to walk to his dressing room. Vladek Zbyszko, his brother, threw Paul Sampson of Germany with a body hold in 34 minutes. Scott makes a note in his book there. Zbyszko was rumored to have suffered a concussion as a consequence of the severe fall he experienced against Le Morin in Montreal. The Brooklyn Daily Eagle reported, quote, that he was in no condition to attempt to overthrow so wiry and powerful an opponent as Lurich. And this was manifest to those who were familiar with Zbyszko's style 5 minutes after he had begun wrestling. The Polish champion appeared with his head wrapped in a large bandage, which dropped off after barely 2 minutes of the struggle, showing a plaster covering to the wound on his head. And this, in turn, splitting and unfolding, often dropping into his eye and seemingly causing him much trouble. So poor Stanislav Zbyszko had quite a bit of trouble over what I guess sounds like apparently a legitimate injury he suffered in Montreal. The next newspaper article we want to look at comes from Chicago, the Daily Book. This is from November 8th, 1913. Something happened yesterday in the Morrison Hotel that we have been waiting for these many days. The only trouble was that it did not go far enough. Yes, sir, two prize fight managers met, and something more than words were exchanged. In short, Charlie Cutler, okay, so Charlie Cutler's a famous wrestler from turn of the century era, a world champion, many consider him a actual world champion, socked Tom Jones in the jaw. Now, we presume this is not the crooner Tom Jones, of course it isn't, but Tom socked Tom Jones in the jaw and was ready to repeat, but Frank Gotch, wrestling champion, interposed his bulk and put the damper on further hostilities. Bad blood has existed between Cutler and Jones for some time. Cutler discovered Jess Willard and assumed his management. When the big Missourian was talked of as heavyweight champion, Jones, the former manager of Ad Woolgas, stepped in and snapped him from under Cutler's wing, taking him to the coast, and Cutler was sore. Yesterday was the first time he and Jones had met since the switch in managers. Cutler wasted no time but swung to Jones' jaw and knocked him against the wall. He started after the human phonograph again. Well, we got circa 1980s nicknames for back here in 1913, right? He socked the human phonograph again, but Gotch grabbed him. Then Jones tried to explain, but for once found his vocal organs were not working convincingly. Can you beat it? Two prize fight managers actually engaging in a fight without the use of typewriters. But our idea of nothing to fight over is who shall manage Jess Willard. So interesting boxing and wrestling colliding there, literally. The Concord, North Carolina Daily Tribune. This is from January 13, 1914, the International Wrestling Tournament. New York City. The International Wrestling Tournament, to be held in Madison Square Garden tomorrow night, promises a special treat for lovers of the mat game. Champion grapplers from many countries will compete in the program, which will include matches as both catch-as-catch-can and Greco-Roman styles. The tournament will be a sweepstakes affair. Each entrant is posts $100. This money, with a substantial purse offered by the management, will go to the winner, after deducting consolation prizes for the second and third man. Some of the best of the American wrestlers will take part in the tournament, while the foreign contestants will include such well-known men as George Lurich from Russia, Alexander Aberg of Finland, Alexander Aberg, I think, was from Russia, Croatia, actually, I think, if I remember correctly. Hansen of Norway, Alvarez, I kid you not, of Spain, Frostinsky of Bohemia, and Momotov the Cossack. So let's find out about this here wackadoo tournament, who all participated in this on January the 14th, 1914. The attendance, 3,000 people, so a little more than it had been the months earlier for the Stanislaus Zbyszko and Vladek Zbyszko. So what happens in this here tournament? Well, Bernard Hansen beat Paul Alvarez. Wonder if that was an ancestor of Flying Brian there. Beautiful Brian, California Brian, whatever. Vladek Zbyszko beat John McLaughlin. 7 minutes. John Hurricle beat George Sandel. Ivan Mudimoff, what a name, Ivan Mudimoff beat Paul Sampson when Paul Sampson was unable to continue at 28 minutes. Wonder if somebody cut his hair. Bible joke there. Gustav Frosinski beat George Lurich. And yes, it is Alexander Aberg. Alexander Aberg beat Mort Henderson. Now, we're going to be talking more about these fellows in the future. Alexander Aberg was quite a wrestler up in the 1910s era. He's a great Greco-Roman wrestler. He kind of just falls off the face of the earth, literally. He goes back to Europe and ends up dying over there, as a matter of fact, in a very interesting story. I've talked about this before, and I need really to do a whole biography podcast special on Alexander Aberg, because he's one of those real forgotten people in wrestling history that's got a very interesting story. Mort Henderson ends up putting on a mask and becoming the mass marvel in the international tournament and being quite the media sensation after doing so. The notes for this, from presumably Scott Teal, says, in newspaper reports, Gustav Frensky versus George Lurich was described as being comical. The time limit was 30 minutes, but they were granted another 5 minutes so a winner could be determined. Okay, yeah, that gimmick all the way back in the 1910s. March 10th, 1914. Raoul de Rohan beat George Sandel. Hallamar London beat Hans Lieber. Here's our old buddy Vladek Zbyszko. He beats former world champion, American champion, Tom Jenkins. Alexander Aberg beat Ivan Mamontov. So, Tom Jenkins back at the Garden again. Tom Jenkins was a great wrestler. He really was. He's another guy that doesn't really get the credit he deserves. Big star around the end of the 1800s, early 1900s. Very instrumental, as we've talked about previously in this series, in the foundation of the World Heavyweight Championship that George Hackenschmidt won. And, I mean, Tom Jenkins was, I mean, there was a point in time just prior to Frank Gotch that I would say Tom Jenkins was the number one guy in America. I mean, he was your number one ranked wrestler easily. Notes for this says, Frank Gotch makes a statement to the press that Americus, Gus Scholin, who wrestles under the name Americus, and Fred Beal should wrestle to determine who should be the world heavyweight champion. So Gotch is about to start pulling many of his retirements. Actually, he's already. We talked about it last episode. Frank Gotch, who as we've talked about in this series, famously never won a single match at Madison Square Garden, is now in his early retirement phase. He's going to be dead in 3 years, as a matter of fact. He retires many, many times, and this is one of them. When Zbyszko beat Americus, Frank Gotch made the statement that he felt Charlie Cutler should be considered the champion. Of course, he and Cutler are friends, as previously mentioned there. On February 20th, 1915, Charles Cutler and his manager, William Rochelle, walked into the offices of the Chicago Tribune and laid claim to the world title due to Gotch being retired and Cutler having been undefeated for 2 years as the American title holder. The title at this time was referred to at various times as either the world or the American title. And so here is where we get Charlie Cutler, who we talked about earlier, slugging a boxer, another boxing manager. It's from the Chicago Tribune, Sunday, February 21st, 1915. If you're interested in the old-timey world champions, well, here's your Wrestling Observer version of, you know, 1914 world champion behind-the-scenes news here. Charlie Cutler claims world title by Harvey T. Woodruff. Charles Cutler, the local heavyweight yesterday, lodged his claim to the wrestling championship of the world. He generally is conceded the American title, but he now comes out in the open as willing to defend his aspirations against all comers, not only American but foreign. In support of Cutler's willingness to meet the best who may offer themselves for a tussle on the mat, manager William Rochelle has deposited with the rider a certified check for $100 as evidence of good faith. He stipulates that the $100 shall become part of a purse of $1,000 to $5,000, of which each contestant shall furnish half, the winner to take all. Cutler has not been defeated on the mat for nearly 2 years, during which time his manager asserts the local man has improved in the strength and skill which go to make a champion. Cutler's last reverse was suffered against Stanislaus Zbyszko, the Pole, at the Globe Theater. Zbyszko is not barred in the present moment. Gotch announces that he has retired, says Rochelle. Why should he take the title with him out to his Iowa farm, where it will not do him or anyone else any good? Cutler is willing to meet all comers. He is entitled to the honor. Ed White charged that the wrestling was crooked after his man, quote, Mystery, was beaten last week. Let him or anyone else produce a candidate willing to wrestle for a substantial side wager, real, not press agent money, and he will find that Cutler is ready, that's Cutler's answer to all charges. The check, deposited with the rider by Rochelle, is drawn on the North Avenue State Bank and is stamped and signed as accepted by that institution. All right, so we got us a proclaimed world champion now. We're going to October the 15th, 1915 for our next show at the Madison Square Garden, the International Greco-Roman title. And again, mentioned Alexander Aberg. Alexander Aberg is considered, during this time period, the best in the world at Greco-Roman wrestling, which does differ, in fact, from Catch-as-Catch-Can wrestling. We've mentioned the differences in the past. Greco-Roman wrestling, which you saw for a long time at the Olympic Games, still is practiced a lot, mostly outside the United States now, where it differs from freestyle wrestling, collegiate wrestling, which many people are familiar with. Greco-Roman wrestling is mostly upper body throws. Okay, it's not like you're getting down on the mat trying to pin somebody. It's more of a throw off their feet with different points of the body making contact. So this was Alexander Aberg's favored style. And here on October 25th, 1915, he defeats Vladek Zbyszko. On the undercard, George Lurich beats Sulo Heavenpa, and Yusef Hussein beat Tom Drack. This is from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, Monday, December 27, 1915. Now, we just talked about Mort Henderson a minute ago, and I mentioned his morphing into the masked Marvel. And we get a masked wrestler in wrestling right now. Now, most of this international tournament is going to take place at the Manhattan Opera House. That's where it's station, but he is definitely the talk of New York wrestling. And here is this article from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. No doubting the fact, the masked marvel is Henderson. Sensational wonder of the International Wrestling Tournament is an American mat artist who was born in Rochester of Scotch parents, has been staying at the Hotel Victoria in Manhattan, and once trailed to the Crescent AC and lost. Possibly you may remember that on December 16th, the Brooklyn Daily Eagle made the statement that the masked marvel, who has been the lifesaver of the International Wrestling Show at the Manhattan Opera House, is Mort Henderson, a Pennsylvania grappler. Notwithstanding the statements that have been made by Ed Poller, Henderson's manager, and by others connected with the tournament, you can lay your last dollar that the Marvel and Henderson are one and the same, and that the idea of a masked mystery came from the brain of Charlie Cutler and Jack Curley. Of course, the hero of That Frenchman, the novel written by Archibald Clavering Gunther, 25 years or more ago, was the real inspiration of the recent mystery. Since the days of That Frenchman, the trick has been worked many times. In fact, there is a story going the rounds that Mark A. Luster is responsible for the Marvel. You may remember that Luster dressed La Belle Dazelle up in a red domino and sent her dancing around the country. According to the tale, Luster suggested a masked man to Ben Atwood, press agent for the wrestling show, and Cutler and Curley supplied the goods. There is no doubting the fact that the masked mystery has been one of the greatest helps to the tournament. His secret has been well kept. Well, at least, I guess, until the Brooklyn Daily Eagle come along. When he has left the Opera House, great care has been taken to see that he has not been followed. An enterprising Manhattan sporting editor had the Marvel followed the other night, and the trail led to the Crescent Athletic Club. The Marvel got out of a taxi cab at the Clinton Street entrance of the club, an entrance that is used by employees. Undoubtedly, he left by the main entrance. However, it was then impossible to pick up the trail. Recently, the Marvel has been making his getaway on a motorcycle. It is said that he has been stopping at the Hotel Victoria in Manhattan. Possibly you would like to know something more about Mort Henderson. He is an American born in Rochester of Scotch parents. At some time in his life, he has been a fireman, brakeman, policeman, pugilist, and most everything that requires strength. Also, he is one of the best, greatest mat artists that has struck little old Manhattan in many a day. Even if the mystery of the Marvel has been solved, there is no getting away from the fact that he is a mighty good wrestler, and one that will come very near winning the principal prize in the big tournament. Tonight, he will meet Aberg in a finish match. It should be one of the greatest bouts seen in Manhattan in years. Scott goes on to say here in his notes, a report in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle stated that Jack Curley and Harry Pollock beat Samuel Reichman to sign Joe Stecker to appear at Madison Square Garden. Reichman claimed he had Vladek Zabisco under contract. Around this same time, Frank Gotch turned down a $15,000 offer to meet Joe Stecker in New York, claiming they would make much more money in the Midwest, between $100,000 and $250,000 would change hands in such a fair. Ed Stranger Lewis tells reporters his record proves he has the right to the world title. Now, let me back up to this international tournament just a minute and tell you that the international tournament just kind of evaporated up. Like, it went to a conclusion, but it kind of lost its momentum. The Masked Marvel didn't win, by the way. Ed Strangler Lewis ended up winning the catch-as-catch-can portion of the tournament, and Alexander Aberg won the Greco-Roman portion of the tournament. But, look, it was really about getting over this Masked Marvel, and they did so. And really, I mean, you know, Mort Henderson sort of also kind of evaporates into history. Be interesting to kind of do a deep dive on Mort Henderson and see what became of him after this. To me, and you know, and I'm not by any means a Mort Henderson expert, though I'd like to, you know, look up some more about him. This seems to be the peak of his career right here. This is at least the peak of his notoriety. I'd really like to know more about what happened to him later on. We go next to the New York World, Friday, January 14th, 1916. I'm going to talk some more about Zbyszko and Stecker here. It says, Reichman to allow Zbyszko to meet Stecker, written by Walter Trumbull. Samuel Reichman, impresario of wrestling tournament, now in progress at the Manhattan Opera House, who holds a contract with Vladek Zbyszko to wrestle in the tournament until it ends, was asked last night if he would allow Vladek Zbyszko to meet Joe Stecker, the Nebraska Wonder, at Madison Square Garden on January 27th. This match has already been announced, Reichman said. My contract with the theater, where we are now appearing, prevents us from participating in any similar affair elsewhere for a stated period. Zbyszko came to me, however, with a strong plea to be permitted to meet Stecker, stating that he was satisfied he could pin him to the mat. He was so insistent that I permitted the bout to be arranged. Our percentage of the receipts goes to those to whom we have contractual obligations, so that this management is in no way interesting except to give Zbyszko a chance to make good. Alexander Aberg notified me today that he would deposit a forfeit of $10,000 of his own money in event he does not throw Stecker if given the opportunity to meet him in the only style in which he wrestles, Greco-Roman. Aberg will deposit the amount with any New York sporting editor selected by Stecker or will place it in escrow in any bank. So this was a common way of doing things back then, especially in the papers, which, you know, there were no newsletters back then or magazines or whatever. This would be the equivalent today of, you know, Brock Lesnar saying, you know, I can beat Kenny Omega or whatever, and I will place $10,000 with Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer to ensure that, you know, I will appear to meet, you know, Kenny Omega or whoever, name your dream matchup. So this was commonplace back then. It was a way of working up interest and excitement. A lot of times, if the match was worked, which was most of the time, the deposit would not be forfeited anyway, so they would keep that, and the money was secreted among who it changed hands between. Oftentimes, of course, with the promoter coming up the richer for it. The next article for us to look at comes from the Lincoln, Nebraska Evening Journal, Thursday, January 20th, 1916. And we're going to talk about now the current, at the time this is being written, Strangler Lewis, Ed Strangler Lewis. He's talking about he thinks he should be world champion in lieu of Frank Gotch. So the headline reads, Strangler Lewis thinks he has right to title, claims Lewis is champion wrestler, tries to show he holds the title. Kentucky boy quotes record to prove he'd top Stecker. New York City. As soon as Strangler Lewis and his manager admit that Joe Stecker is the wrestling champion of the world, it ought to be almost unanimous. But Strangler and his manager assert that the Kentucky boy is at the top of the heap, and they spring a lengthy list of comparative scores to prove this. Stecker's appearance in this city makes the claim of Strangler all the more interesting. After his retirement, Frank Gotch named Henry Ordman and Jess Westergaard as the logical contenders for the throne he vacated, just as Jim Jeffries selected Tommy Burns and Marvin Hart to fight for the world's heavyweight boxing title when he left the ring. So, again, we see here, yet again, Frank Gotch is retired. Yet again. Last time it was America's Charlie Cutler. This time it's, well, you know, I guess I'm still world champion, but I'm going to retire. But, you know, I would probably support the winner of Henry Ordman and Jess Westergaard as the new world champion. So Gotch is going to do this over and over until really all the way up to his death in 1917, honestly. The article goes on to continue. Ordman and Westergaard met with Gotch refereeing, and Ordman was the victor. That match started the process of secession by which Lewis asserts he seceded to the championship. Sandow quotes record. Billy Sandow, Lewis's manager, discussing and supporting his protege's claim, said last night, Ordman, by defeating Westergaard, seceded to Gotch's title. Now I'll show you how Lewis comes to his claim for it. After Ordman won from Westergaard, he was matched with Charlie Cutler in a bout advertised as a championship affair. They met in Minneapolis, and Charlie Cutler won, throwing Ordman twice in 37 minutes. Then Cutler met Dr. Benjamin Roller in Benton Harbor, Michigan, with Ed Smith of Chicago refereeing. Cutler was then regarded as the champion by virtue of his victory over Ordman. Roller beat Cutler, registering two falls in less than an hour. Roller then met Strangler Lewis in defense of the world title. They faced each other twice in championship matches in Wheeling, West Virginia. Roller won the first match and retained his championship. In their second contest, Strangler Lewis was the victor. Carl Stein refereed both matches. Strangler Lewis defeated Roller 2 out of 3 falls. This was last May. Strangler Lewis won the first fall in less than an hour. Then Roller threw Lewis in 22 minutes. Lewis came back and won the third and a championship deciding fall in 14 minutes. After defeating Roller and winning the title, Stecker challenged Strangler Lewis. They met in Evansville, Indiana last October. Bert Sisson was the third man on the mat. The men wrestled to a draw, the time being 2 hours and 10 minutes. Now, to further strengthen Lewis' claim to the title and eliminated Stecker from all championship consideration, Dr. Roller defeated Stecker in the latter's own hometown, Fremont, Nebraska, a year and a half ago. After that victory, Strangler Lewis defeated Benjamin Roller. If all this doesn't make Lewis the world champion catch-as-catch-can wrestler, then who is? Certainly it isn't Joe Stecker. Briefly, Strangler Lewis succeeded to the title like this. Ordman defeated Westgaard, both of whom were selected by Gotch on his retirement to wrestle for the title he vacated. Cutler defeated Ordman. Roller defeated Cutler. Lewis defeated Roller. Stecker held Lewis to a draw after he had been defeated by Roller, the man Lewis threw. You'll have to admit that Lewis is the champion. So, lots of jockeying, and again, you have to remember, there was only back then one World Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. There were lots of claimants to the title, but there was only one. The belt, that George Hackenschmidt had won, lost to Frank Gotch, and Frank Gotch never lost the World Championship, so he was the undefeated champion. Unlike what wrestling would become later on with different company champions, and even an alliance with the National Wrestling Alliance, then eventually WWF, now WWE, becomes the number one name in professional wrestling. Many people considered it the only real World Championship. Lots of different companies had their own world champion. Back then, it hadn't yet got to that point. You had many different people claiming basically to be the best wrestler in the world. I mean, that's what they were claiming. With Frank Gotch, undisputably so, nobody beat him. Gotch didn't help matters any by retiring, 4 or 5 times a year, and each time, quote, passing the world title down to, somebody else. And then whomever he would pick, be it Ordman, Cutler, or whoever, somebody would say, well, I beat that guy, so I'm really the world champion. And it remains this mess for quite a while, especially once we see the New York Combine really get going, the Gold Dust Trio and all that. Eventually, it kind of is Joe Stecker who becomes really the dominant world champion. We'll see how that all unfolds. And ultimately, of course, Ed Strangler Lewis. But it's going to take a little bit to get there, and we're going to have to wade through the weeds first to make that. Now then, we go to the New York World. Again, this is January 26th, 1916, and we'll wrap up on this note because we're going to get back to the Masked Marvel again. Masked Marvel will wrestle Joe Stecker. So, the Masked Marvel is going to meet Joe Stecker. Remember, Joe Stecker, many people consider the world champion. Strangler Lewis claims to be the world champion. Frank Gotch is not dead yet, so I guess he's really the world champion. But for one of these claimant world championships, we got the Masked Marvel is going to wrestle Joe Stecker. And this is a big match. I mean, the Masked Marvel, Mort Henderson, has become a big deal, mainly because of the papers and the international tournament and all this. So this story by Walter Trumbull. Joe Stecker, the Nebraska scissors grinder, and I know in modern day that has a totally different connotation, but back then it was the scissor hold, the leg hold that Joe Stecker used, is to wrestle the mysterious masked marvel, whose identity is positively unknown, aside from the fact that he is Mort Henderson of Pennsylvania, at Madison Square Garden tomorrow evening. A little tongue-in-cheek there from the newspaper. Stecker was to have wrestled Vladek Zabisco of Poland, although you would never have guessed it from the name. But an unfortunate accident occurred. Zabisco, being a great athlete, of course, sleeps in a room with the windows open. As he lay in bed, pondering upon the Stecker match, such rosy dreams of victory came to him that he instinctively pulled the bedclothes over his head in order that nothing might distract his thoughts. This pulling up of the covering left his feet exposed, and as a result, the chilly breezes, which crept treacherously through the window, pounced upon those poor, unprotected pedal extremities and so congealed them that they would be absolutely useless in a wrestling bout. Well, you can tell the paper really has no respect for wrestling here. This is a complete tongue-in-cheek, we can't even believe we're being made to write this story articles that have so, you know, been so prevalent in wrestling history. This is all the way back now in what do we say, 1916. So you can see this has always been a thing. Continues, to be sure, Zabisco diagnosed the case otherwise. He said his head hurt. It hurt especially whenever he thought of Stecker. Zabisco's injury made it necessary to secure another opponent for Stecker. Jack Curley said he knew the very man. No sooner had he announced his name than a succession of shrill, plaintive, and continuous cries emanated from the offices of Sam Ratchman, promoter of the Manhattan Opera House wrestling tournament. Firstly, he did not propose to have his masked marvel turned into a masked morsel to furnish food for Stecker's reputation. Secondly, all he seemed likely to get out of the match was a headache. The marvel himself was strongly in favor of the idea. In addition to having a prominent nose, and if prominent noses are a sign of greatness, Henderson and Bill Donovan are two of the greatest men in the world. The marvel has red hair. Make the guarantee worthwhile, and he will wrestle anything that ever stood on two legs. Therefore, there was some considerate rumpus. Injunctions were sought, lawyers were mentioned, and threats, masked and unmasked, were uttered. Finally, however, Ratchman and Curley held a peace meeting that matters were adjusted. Stecker, therefore, will wrestle Henderson, and unless all the dope is wrong, should flop him in something under 10 minutes. The fact that the promoters of the match have not absolute confidence in the ability of the Marvel to furnish a full evening of entertainment is shown by their offer of $500 to any man who will step up after the main bout and stick around with Stecker for 15 minutes without being thrown. As far as $500 is concerned, real money will be used. Also, the sum of $100 is offered for each minute the challenger lasts after the specified 15. Also real money. Take the word of Jack Curley for it. Of course, the promoters send out this offer under Stecker's name. That is professional courtesy. And anyhow, if the promoters are sure enough to risk $500 on the proposition, Stecker would probably risk $5,000. Stecker is a farm boy. He likes wrestling better than anything except his home. New York has, as yet, no attraction for him. He believes that he can throw any man in the world, and it was only when he was convinced that, to prove his belief he would have to travel, that he consented to come east. Even the wrestlers themselves, and they are as jealous as grand opera stars, admit that the Nebraska boy is a great grappler. That is the pinnacle of praise. Moreover, he, like all great artists, is engrossed in his work. He doesn't stall, but goes about his business in the most efficient way, and finishes his opponent as quickly as he can. His ambition is to meet Frank Gotch. He thinks he could throw him and wants to try before the champion gets so far along that his age can be used as an alibi for defeat. To throw Frank Gotch is certainly some ambition. Dr. Benjamin F. Roller insisted yesterday that an injustice had been done him in the notices of his match with Stecker. They say I threw him when he was a boy. said the doctor. As a matter of fact, it was about 20 months ago in Fremont, Nebraska. I threw him in 14 and a half minutes and threw his brother in 8.5 minutes, and I did it with a reverse hammerlock. Perhaps he could throw me now, but I don't believe it. Well, there's that $500. So says the New York World, Wednesday, January 26, 1916. So, what happens in the match between Joe Stecker and the Masked Marvel? Well, you're going to have to tune in to the next time we talk about this show, because the match does happen. January 27th, 1916, the world champion, supposedly, against the Masked Marvel, Mort Henderson, plus an interesting undercard that's going to have a major name in the future. Is going to be on there as well. So we'll talk all about that, the newspaper coverage, and much more when we return to Madison Square Garden here on the Dragon King Carl, or When It Was Cool, wrestling podcast. In the meantime, I hope you will check out my website, whenitwascool.com, and subscribe to the When It Was Cool wrestling podcast, where we talk all about pro wrestling history. That's what we're about. Also, speaking of wrestling history, I have a new book out, available on Amazon, perhaps in select bookstores elsewhere. I haven't seen it in the wild yet, but supposedly it's supposed to be getting distributed. The Dragon King Carl Stern 1983 Pro Wrestling Omnibus. Yes, you can get that in print form. You can get it for Kindle. If you are a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com, you get it at the $10 or more support level. So if you just want the book, sign up for 1 month at the $10 level and get all of our podcasts, which now number over 2,000, plus a digital copy of the book as well. And I think you'll really enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy our website. Lots of stuff there. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you here again soon with a new show.
Here's a soundbite from the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Podcast from whenitwascool.com. We get the Patriots. We've already talked about Firebreaker Chip. Todd Champion. Now, mind you, remember, I said these are all essentially male strippers. Van Hammer, the guitar guy. How did somebody not name the Army guy Dale? How was he not Dale Champion? So you could have had Chippendales. I mean, have I got to go back in time and book 1992 WCW just so we can have the tag team of Chip and Dale? You can get more from this podcast and many others by going to whenitwascool.com. And remember, support us on Patreon.